All right, let's get with it. Acts chapter 2, verse 27. Everybody look at it. Everybody look at Acts chapter 2, verse 27. Those of you who are trying to figure out who the 14 patriarchs are. I said there are 14 individuals in the Bible called patriarchs. If you didn't find Acts 2:27, you missed the answer. 29 it is. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chuck. If you do not have Acts 2:29 as part of the answer, then you missed the answer. Acts 2:29 says that David is a patriarch. Who else is called a patriarch? Acts chapter 7, what verse, Chuck? Acts chapter 7, verse 8 mentions 12 patriarchs that were the sons of Jacob. Jacob bore 12 patriarchs. So you take Jacob's 12 sons, you take David, who's called the patriarch, and then you add to that Hebrews chapter what, Chuck? What verse? Chapter 7, verse 4, Abraham's called a patriarch. There are 14 individuals in the Bible called patriarchs. And all that is just something we throw out. And for those of you who think you know everything about the Bible, I just want to prove to you, you're not as smart as you think you are. No, we're really trying to have this as a challenge for everybody. And so if you want to, so who's the first murderer? Did you find the first murderer in the Bible? John chapter 8, verse 44 will tell you who the first murderer is in the Bible. Now, on the card, I think who committed the first murder, the answer to that is Cain. But there was somebody who killed somebody before Cain killed, and that's John chapter 8 and verse 44. All right, you got it? That's all we're going to do. Here's your question for this week, for those of you who are deep Bible students and want to get into it. We know how many years there was from the creation to the flood, right? Do we know that number? 1,656 years from the creation of the flood. Not asking you to figure that one out. I want to know from the flood to the birth of Isaac. From the flood to the birth of Isaac, how many years are there? That's something for you to... That's not for everybody. That's just for somebody who just wants... From the time of the flood until the birth of Isaac, how many years are there? Okay? You can figure that out, all right? Just to challenge everyone. Now let's get to the serious part of it, and that is the questions that are on this card, and trying to make some application of it. We're over to the flood, are we not? We're over there to the flood. If I ask you about how many generations there are from Adam to Noah, how many generations are there from Adam to Noah? 10 generations from Adam. How many from Noah to Abraham? Yes. I've fully lost it. It's still on my lapel, okay? It's just I've lost my lapel. All right. 10 generations then. There are 10 generations then from Noah to Abraham. There are two characters that are of biblical importance in that genealogy from Adam until Noah. One of them is the man who walked with God. Who's that? Enoch. The other is the man who lived longer than anybody else in the Bible. Who's that? How many years did Methuselah live? And if you're dyslexic, you can still get it, all right? 969. Only way I know to miss that question is just stand on your head and come up with 696. And so don't do it that way. But 969. Now then, you've got the coming of the flood. Every thought and imagination of man's heart was on evil continually. So we then have the time of the building of the ark. Anybody know, but perchance, about how big the ark was? How big was the ark? Anybody know those dimensions? I don't know. Is that on a card, David? Is that on one of the... I don't think it's on the prophet card, right? It's on either the priest card or the king card. 300 cubits long... 50 cubits wide and 30 cubits high. How long is a cubit? Tip of the finger to your elbow. Tip of the finger to your elbow. That's how long a cubit. Now, Miles, we're not going to use your elbow, okay? I'm sorry, all right? But that's, if it's 18 inches, how long is the ark? 450 feet. Do you know how long 450 feet is? If you stand out here at the far end of our parking lot where Norm built those horseshoe places up there, if you stand there and you go all the way from there, all the way down toward the road, when you get to the last set of bushes, right before you get to the stop sign, that's how long the ark is. You know, you stop and think about how long that ark is. You ought to get out there and just look at that. And then from there, you've got to come over 75 feet from that corner, which doesn't quite get you all the way to the building. And 30 cubits high would be 45 feet high. What's the ceiling height in here? Anybody know? It's right at 30, as I recall. I think it's 29 or 30, something like that. And so, you know, it's this tall plus half this tall again. The ark was no small ship by any means. We don't know the shape of it. Almost every picture you've seen, it's always got a bow on it, right? I'm sure whenever you have a bow on it so you have the motor so it'll drive you anywhere you want to. Could have been barge shape. It easily could have easily been been rectangular in shape. Now, Noah goes into the ark. The reason for that is because of the wickedness there is on this earth. Who built the ark? Noah. How many people go into the ark?
Eight.
They are Noah and his three sons. Do you know the names of his three sons? Shem, Ham, and Japheth. You know this. This is so great. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Okay. The number of days it rained during the flood. 40 days and 40 nights. How many people were in the ark?
Eight.
We've already got that. Where did what kind of wood was the ark built of?
Gopher.
Now, another name for a gopher is the way to remember the mountains the ark rested on. Another name for a gopher is a rat. And so, where did the ark landed? Land? Mount Ararat. Okay, that might help you. I don't know if that's any way to help you remember that. The question is, how long was Noah in the ark? If it was 40 days and 40 nights, and so sometimes people say, well, how long was the flood? 40 days and 40 nights. Wrong answer. About how long was Noah in the ark? 50 days, somebody's guess. More than that.
150.
More than 150 days. What? Chad, where on earth did you come up with that number? 225, but it's wrong, okay? 1 year and 10 days, with the possibility of it being 1 year and 17 days. You read about he went into the ark, and it may have been, if it started raining 7 days after he went in the ark, it's 1 year, 17 days. But if it started raining immediately, it's just, you read the text, and I don't know if the text is that clear. But, you know, you stop and think about him being in the ark for a year and 10 days. That is an amazing devastation. And it shows to us, and we've got to get this in our own hearts and our own lives, God must be moved against sin. Those three points I made in that sermon this morning. Unalterable justice is going to come. And you read it all the way through the Bible. You could have taken any story in the Bible and you read that justice must come. And when every thought and imagination of man's heart was evil continually, it repented God that he made. God was sorry he had made man. Have you ever thought about the possibility God's sorry he made you? That's an astounding lesson. When the Bible talks about we meditate on the law of the Lord day and night, we ought to read that story and then we ought to come to a realization of it. That God looked down at this earth and he said, I'm sorry I made that person. Now, we do know that there's a verse that says that Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. That's a key verse for anybody to remember. Anybody know where that key location might be that says Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord? Or is that a memory verse?
Genesis 6:9.
That's a memory verse, right? Genesis chapter 6 and verse 8, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Genesis chapter 6 and verse 8. You got that? Let's say that together. Genesis 6:8. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Genesis 6:8. Got it? One more time. Genesis 6:8. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Genesis 6:8. And if you'll say that again and again, you'll be a long way toward memorizing these things. There's another verse that's on the memory verses here on the prophet card. Genesis 1:1. You know that one? Genesis, let's say it together. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:1. S on the word heavens there. One more time. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:1. This is important for us to know. These key locations, yes, we've already gone too far in relationship to that. Next question, the sign given to Noah. When Noah comes out of the ark, God gives a sign to Noah. First makes a promise, and then the rainbow itself becomes the sign of the promise. Here on my finger is a sign. It's a sign of a promise that I made. So God made a promise. What was the promise that He made? I'll never do what? I never again will do what I've done before, and that is to destroy the earth. Now, by water. Here's an interesting thing. Have you ever thought about how on earth could that water cover the earth? And surely that was just a local flood. You ever hear anybody try to advance that? That it was a regional flood? There's all kinds of things wrong with that. In the first place, if it's a reasonable flood, forget about the animals. You know, instead of putting them in the ark, just run them across the mountains over there. You know, it's a whole lot easier to make the animals survive. But the rainbow is the clearest demonstration of the universal flood. Have there been a lot of local floods? Oh, yes. But God's made a promise that He never again would destroy this earth by flood like He had just done it. That's how we know it's a universal flood. Now, how deep was the water in the flood? Did it cover the mountains? How high did it cover the mountains? It covered them and then some. The highest mountain was covered by, you remember how deep the water was? 15 cubits. The highest mountain on earth was covered by 15 cubits. That's an astounding manifestation of the power of God. Now, the Bible uses the flood for a lot of spiritual lessons. The Bible talked about God once waited while the ark was preparing. Why? Give men a chance to repent. He could have sent the flood way back there. He could justly have sent the flood right whenever he decided that that's what he was going to do. He could have justly done it. Man was evil. Every thought and imagination of man's heart was on evil continually. He could have right then sent the flood. Why did he not send the flood? He was hoping that there would be repentance. Long suffering of God, he waited while the ark was preparing. That's point number three in that sermon this morning. God really wants the world to be saved. And He gave everybody on this earth a chance to repent. It's interesting to try to figure out how many people perished during the flood. You remember how many years it was from the time of the creation to the flood? 1656. Now, how old is this nation? America. Forget us Indians. How old is this nation? 250 years. In the 250 years since the pilgrims arrived here, we have gone from a nation that would fit on however many boats. Well, it's been more than the 300 years since the, thank you. In the 300 years, we've gone from a nation that fit on about three boats. To the present population of America, what is it, 280 million? I don't know what, 300 million? Now you take that, take those numbers and take that out for 1,600 years. And then you have them living 900 years and how many children they'd have in 900 years. It's an astounding study to make. And some mathematician can work all that out and everything. But I've seen the number being as many as 20 million people that perished during the flood. The smallest number I ever saw was 10 million. That ought to sober us up. Whenever people say, well, how could God send anybody to hell? Well, he looked down. Here's 20 million people on this earth. And he said, I'm through with every one of them. I'm going to send the flood and get rid of every single one of them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Genesis 6:8 tells us that. Which means, by the way, that Noah was not sinless. A sinless man does not need grace. And so Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And the flood came. And the whole world was destroyed. How many birds did he send out? Whenever the flood is over, how many birds did he send out? How many kinds of birds did he send out? Let me ask that. Two kinds of birds. What were they? A raven and a dove. He first sends out what? The raven. What does it do? He never comes back? Does he send out the raven first, David?
Yes, he does.
Sends out the raven first. You sure, Chad? Okay. Sends the dove. The dove comes back. Empty-handed. Sends the dove out again. He comes back with a branch evidently in his beak. And that allowed Noah to know now that trees are growing. Now, if you'll read that account, you'll find when he took the cover off the ark, even prior to that time. And so you've got that whole flood story. But it's not just a flood story. It's a flood story that has to do with our lives. Because in 2 Peter, this statement about, it's in 1 Peter we read, God waited while the ark was preparing. 2 Peter makes that same argument about us. The Lord is not willing that any should perish, but is long-suffering to usward. That's amazing, isn't it? Why hasn't God destroyed America? Is it overstating it? He hasn't destroyed America because there needs to be another gospel meeting, give people a chance. And maybe overly specific in relationship to, but the principle's there, isn't it? God has not destroyed America, not willing that any should perish, and is counting on us to try to save that one more person. That's the seriousness of Bible study, guys. That's serious. Now, we don't have the question on the card about the next event in the book of Genesis, but that's the Tower of Babel. When they came out of the ark, God said, go out and replenish the earth. Genesis chapter 11 is a story about the tower they built to reach up into heaven. When I was a kid, I learned the story about the Tower of Babel and Jack and the Beanstalk at pretty much the same point in my life. And I'm not sure if it's my Sunday school teacher or just I wasn't paying attention, but I really got concerned about, maybe God was concerned about man climbing all the way up to heaven. And so they were trying to build a tower to get up to heaven so they could find the goose that laid the golden eggs. I mean, I got it all mixed up in there. But it's interesting, we misunderstand the use of the word heavens. You know, the Jews talked about three heavens. The Jews talked about the fact that the birds fly in the heavens. It talks about the sun and the moon and the stars being in the heavens. And then it talks about the third heaven where God is. And so if you'll read the story of the Tower of Babel carefully, you will see the statement is not, well, let's build us a tower up to heaven in order that we might get to heaven by our own works. That's not what that story is all about. God had said, go out and cover the earth, and they said, lest we be scattered, let's build this tower. The walls, when the spies came back from spying out the promised land, Deuteronomy chapter 1 said, the walls of those cities reached up to the heavens. And so there were things that were erected up to heaven. And the sin was not that they were trying to build a tower to get up to where God was and, you know, and earn their way up into heaven. That's not. Read it carefully. Lest we be scattered, let's build this tower. And God said, I'll take care of that. And that's when He confounded their languages. And that's where languages came from. It's an amazing thing about language. When I was in college, majored in speech, and it's interesting to read about people talking about where language comes from. I mean, you got these men in the cave, and one of them says, ugh. And the other guy, after I say ugh, you say,
glug.
Glug, okay. It'd be better if we'd speak the same words. Ugh.
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 Ugh, ugh. And you say, quit changing the subject. The whole concept of language is that it started out so unbelievably primitive, that it was a very, very primitive language. And do you know the older languages are the more complex languages? It's an amazing thing. You'd think if language is evolutionary, like everything else is supposed is alleged to be, you really would think that there'd be one word in the ancient vocabulary, and that's ugh. And that the older languages would be so simple. The reality is, even English is being changed to simplicity. If I say BTW. See, those who are older may not know what BTW mean, by the way. IMO.
In my opinion.
There's a whole language, these little kids, they cannot spell, they cannot, they think the word, it's amazing what's happened to our language. But that's the illustration of how there is the dumbing down of language. I think me and Gary may be the last two people on the earth that use the subjunctive mood. You do still use it, don't you? I don't have to take you out of the wheel. Okay, sometime. Everybody says, if I was you, I would do this. Incorrect. If I were you, subjunctive mood, and nobody uses it. President doesn't use it, you know. If I were you, this is what I would do. And that's just an illustration of the dumbing down of our own language in our lifetime. Did you even know there's a subjunctive mood in English? Do you study English at school? Okay, you don't even study that in school. Okay, guys, that's it. We're headed right now for Abraham. That's where we'll be next. And so if you want to get over there and study it, we're going to talk about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and everything that's involved in that. There's the cornerstone groups. Yes, Tommy. See David in the back if you need manuals and or whatever, okay?